In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening on Thursday, April 18th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Industry chatter today, as every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour, and I'm happy to introduce you today to John Dittmer, Vice President for Array Applied Innovation. John, it's great to have you here, and you may actually own the record for the longest distance someone's traveled to be on Industry Chatter. It's great to see you today.
It's good to be here.
Because I know you came expressly from Alabama only to be on this show, and you're going to turn right around and go back, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the
case.
Well, welcome here. It's great to have you in D.C. First of all, tell me what you do for government customers.
Anything we can. I mean, you understand the economy today. Really, it's that's not exactly true. We grew up we are an IT services company. We grew up doing almost anything that we could do within the IT services space that would allow us to align ourselves closer to the customer's mission, and that's really our focus. We are focused on IT services. Primarily in areas like application support that align ourselves closer to the customer's mission. Mm. In other words, it's easy to provide support to somebody's desktop to ensure that their Windows PC is working appropriately and is available, 99% of the time. What we really want to do is align ourselves so that the customer is truly dependent on us as a partner to accomplish what they need to accomplish.
How are you seeing the budget environment that the government's in right now affecting what your customers are asking you for and the challenges that they're having that maybe aren't directly associated with your relationship with them, but that you kind of see underlying some of the things that they're trying to do?
That's really the $64,000 question. It's changed the nature of the game. They're a lot more price-focused than they used to be. And they're not focused necessarily on the best way of doing business. They're really focused on saving money, maintaining what they have. Using a common term is bare bones sustainment. It's a tough environment to remain competitive in. And as a small business that's trying to grow, it's even that much tougher to try to grow business, because the only way we have to grow it, it's not through thought leadership, but basically by providing a better price.
Mm-hmm. And is price really driving all of the issues that you're seeing right now? Mm-hmm. I mean, I hear all the time about LPTA and how
Absolutely.
That even procurements that don't look like it on the surface wind up being that at award time.
It's hard not to play the price game. Market forces are absolutely driving us to be price competitive even when we don't think we have to be. I don't know that I said that right, but it's rare that we see an award today where price isn't the major factor.
Mm-hmm.
And the Air Force, which is the space that I predominantly work in, we are probably 90 or 95% Air Force within our defense business. I can't remember an award that wasn't price-focused. Mm-hmm. I truly can't.
Now, what does that do for the way that you shape the responses when you write proposals? What does that do for the way that you prepare to serve the customer ultimately?
Well, it's all about how well you understand the customer and that customer's needs. There's for every opportunity, we break it down. If we don't know as much about the customer as we'd like to, it just becomes a price war.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the competitions are, as you said, the LPTA, low price technically acceptable awards. And it all in those cases, in those instances, it's all about how they define technically acceptable. And some program offices know how to play that game, others don't. In every case, because we've been playing LPTA for quite some time now, we have a pretty good feel for what it takes to play that game and what it's going to take to be competitive.
What are the rules, or what do you think the rules should be for that, for the customer to wind up getting what they really want, which is something that works well, rather than is just the cheapest thing, which can be, I know, two different things?
Well, I think the original intent for LPTA was a commoditized service, something that's largely repeatable, fairly simple, not very complex, doesn't require a lot of thought leadership or innovation or transformation. And I think we've lost that focus. There's certainly a lot of fairly complex acquisitions. Now, nobody's doing anything really transformational right now, but there are acquisitions that are more complex than they should be that are pursuing an LPTA award. And for the most part, I think that's broken. I wish there was a little bit more governance around that, around the acquisition process to enforce.
Do you think that's really only budget-driven, or is that also a risk aversion problem that the agencies are maybe just more skeptical about getting themselves into situations where a judgment call might not make them look as well as they'd like to?
Oh, it's absolutely both. Based on my experience, and I've been in the IT acquisition business for almost 30 years, I hate to admit that, but the acquisition workforce is not as mature as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I'm not sure why that is. It's a lot more challenging. 20 years ago, IT acquisition was a lot simpler than it is today. The expectations around the agility of the acquisition process were not then what they are today. And the acquisition workforce is having a hard time keeping up. And so an easy way around that complexity is to think, well, how can we simplify the award process? In an LPTA, source selection is a fairly simple process. You have a definition of what technically acceptable means to the program office or the customer. You implement that, and then you award to the low price.
Now, I hear on an ongoing basis about requirements issues inside the Pentagon, various branches, and throughout the agency. You mentioned LPTAs were designed for acquisitions that weren't very complex, and that's kind of the opposite of just about every acquisition that I hear about from right. the Defense Department. I mean, they defining requirements and keeping them simple seem to be the two big challenges that I hear. Is that what you see in your experience also?
Unfortunately. The requirements are not very well defined. And if they're poorly stated, they're going to be misinterpreted or loosely interpreted, inconsistently interpreted by industry as a mm-hmm. part of the proposal process. That drives a level of complexity into the acquisition process, which is just the reverse of what they're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
IT is fairly commoditized, or it should be, even within the defense space. And so for the most part, a lot of what the services should be focused on should be fairly commodity-based and should be fairly easy to buy. That's not the way it's moving forward.
Is that lack of clarity in requirements, do you think, is that something you can trace back or people can trace back to the experience issue in the workforce, or is there something else going on there maybe?
There's probably several factors at play. There's always been a concept that everybody understands IT because we all have, at least in this day and age, everybody's got IT at home. That makes everybody an expert. There's a lot of desire for bleeding edge technology. And we see a lot of requirements that focus on technology more around the solution than around the need. My preference is now having spent time on both sides is that they focus more on the need and the performance associated with that need than the solution.
That would require, though, another issue to be resolved, and that's the relationship and the level of dialogue between industry and the agency. You're smiling as I'm saying that because you've right. heard this before, I imagine.
Well, the risk aversion and the inexperience of the acquisition force significantly closes the level of communications that should be there. I mean, I used to wear a blue suit. And one of my tenets was to be sure that we had plenty of dialogue, that both sides knew what was going on. That made for a much cleaner acquisition process. The more open the dialogue, the less risk there was in the acquisition strategy, assuming both sides were listening. That's fundamental to the acquisition process, or at least it should be. And that's not quite what we see today.
Mm-hmm. What will help that? I mean, Dan Gordon tried MythBusters, talked about it on the program on Monday. Some places we see success, some places we don't see as much success. But it seems that because we're not seeing as much success as we'd like, it's going to take more than that. What do you think will help drive that?
Yeah, there's no one thing. There has to be more successes before everybody starts to accept it. More successes, fewer failures associated with that. Better training. We're not doing a good job of training our IT acquisition workforce. We train them as acquisition program managers or contracting officers, but not as IT acquisition. And there is a different set of rules, different set of challenges. Mm-hmm. I mean, the same basic acquisition rules apply, but there is a different set of challenges associated with IT.
One of the other challenges that's exposed itself over the last couple of years is the pace at which technology changes relative to the pace of the acquisition process. That's what we'll talk about when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. John Dittmer of Array Applied Innovations, my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
NASA's human capital and workforce strategy. How is NASA tackling the human capital challenges it's facing? What is NASA doing to develop future leaders and pursue a strategic workforce planning approach? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Jerry Buchholz, Chief Human Capital Officer at NASA. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
The 2013-14 season ticket deposit campaign is on now.
Obviously, it's one of the hottest tickets in town.
Full season ticket deposits are $250 per seat.
Puck fired. They score!
You don't want to miss the 2013-14 Caps team in action.
It's hard to beat the atmosphere here. It's rocking and rolling.
Do your part in building America's hockey capital. Call 202-266-CAPS or log on to WashingtonCaps.com for more information.
As the U.S. government adopts cloud services, virtualization, and other technologies, it must also look toward an integrated and enhanced network infrastructure. HP Converged Infrastructure, with the Flex Network architecture as the cornerstone, can revolutionize how data centers are built. Using a standards-based approach, HP Networking delivers a simpler, more secure infrastructure, enables agile service delivery, and drives business value from core to edge. Combined with HP servers, storage, and services, HP Networking protects businesses across physical and virtual environments, delivers application services in minutes versus days, and reduces networking costs. The HP Converged Infrastructure integrates servers, storage, and networking, eliminating technology silos and freeing up resources so you can focus on innovation. To plan your strategy or to learn about their open-flow-enabled edge switches with full lifetime warranty and no licensing required, talk to an HP representative at 800-277-8988. That's 800-277-8988.
And now, Technology Insights with Tom Frana, President and CEO of Vion, speaking with John Mansfield, Executive Vice President, Global Solution Strategy and Development for Hitachi.
There are at least thousands of startup companies that are out there developing new technology, etc. How do you address all the companies that are on the edge of bringing something significant to the market?
Well, we actually have a pretty detailed process working with our business alliance and development team. I think we've done a very good job of making sure whatever partnership we have is sustainable, adds value to our end customers, and that we can support it long term. It is a challenge. The market is moving faster than I've ever seen it move in the past. So we have to be forward thinking, but also deliver well-engineered solutions for the market.
For over 33 years, Vion excels at providing IT solutions and services, addressing the most complex requirements. With partners like Hitachi Data Systems, Vion customers are offered the most innovative technologies available with Vion's level of reliability and flexibility. To hear more of Technology Insights, visit Vion.com.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. Performance officers have sprouted out all over government, but are they making a difference when it comes to delivering on the mission? GAO says it's a mixed bag and they need more training. Plus, we'll bring you the latest from the Defense Department and Homeland Security budget hearings for 2014. Those stories and much more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. John Dittmer of Array Applied Innovation, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And we talked about the rate of technology change a moment ago, and it's changing dramatically faster now than the acquisition process in government is changing. And I wonder if that's creating some issues in the acquisition process. It strikes me that by the time acquisitions get to the award and execution stage, we're seeing a lot of cases where technology's kind of overcome the solution that was originally agreed to.
That's absolutely true, but that's not the biggest challenge in the IT space. For the most part, I don't think we need to stay at the bleeding edge of technology to accomplish what we need to accomplish. There are cases when that's absolutely true, especially in the areas of cyber operations and cyber defense, where it's important that we're using the latest tools, because if not, we won't be able to manage to the threat. But for business systems, the technology advances in financial management or supply chain management are not changing. They're not real differentiators. And most of the time, an 80 or 90% solution is going to be better than what we have today. The real challenge with the rate of the acquisition process is meeting customer expectations, at least in my opinion.
So it's more that it takes us back to the requirements issue again, I guess, that the customer thinks they need a level of technology that maybe isn't necessary to do in the job.
Absolutely. It's the same challenge all over again. You've got a customer that's too focused on the solution, and that's keeping us from moving into areas where there's true efficiencies, like software as a service, where maybe somebody's got a capability that it's fielded that Walmart is using today to provide a supply chain management solution that may provide a 60 or 70% solution for a capability that we're in dire need of today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a 60 or 70% solution at probably a third of the cost is a pretty good deal. And because the service is already instantiated and you're just paying for it by the drink, why not go there? The real misalignment is with the customer.
How much of the apprehension about those kinds of things, because of it being the customer, is cultural? It's just we're not used to doing it that way, or we've always done it this other way,
right,
or that kind of thing. Is that a lot of it?
Well, the defense customer thinks automatically that we are unique. I used to be a defense customer, and it's hard not to think that way. It doesn't – if you think about what industry needs to do within the commercial sector, you look at – no matter – even if it's Walmart or Compass Bank or no matter who it is, they've got a level of security and performance that's just as important to their mission as most of what we need within the Department of Defense. It's not that much – I mean, there are unique capabilities, absolutely unique rules that the Department of Defense requires as a part of what it does. But that's a small percentage of what's really driving the acquisition process.
When you look at that equation, and you have the advantage of being on both sides of it, how do you drive, or how should the system try to drive that out, that cultural uniqueness, I guess? We're different than everybody else. Or is that something that's so embedded into the mindsets of the people who run the system that there's no way to change it?
Well, there's absolutely a way to change it. The key is an agile governance process, some sort of agile oversight. Agile is the key word for me. We've tried to implement governance before, and it's been very bureaucratic. And with the if you take a bureaucratic process and overlay it on what everybody considers to be an acquisition process that already takes too long, that's never going to be a happy marriage. But if we've got an agile process that, through its results, simplifies the acquisitions and streamlines some of the decision-making associated with that, that's going to be effective. And hopefully that'll start to change some of the mindset of the customers.
And I guess then we go back to another thing we touched on earlier, which is success stories.
Absolutely.
That will create success stories, it sounds like. And then when somebody sees those, they can be more confident that the one that they're going to do, there's a lot less risk involved.
We have to go there. That's the best way to train somebody, is to walk through. Well, first of all, based on my experience as a defense acquisition trained killer, there isn't a lot of new documentation that's being created. When a program office generates an acquisition strategy, they try to learn from what's been done before. And so if we've got a winning process or a successful acquisition, that's going to establish a baseline for a lot of the programs that follow. It's just an efficient way of doing business, an efficient way of reusing what's been done before. The more of those patterns that we can establish, the more successful we'll be. And by and by, we'll make training less of an issue. That's through that repetition, we'll provide a lot of the experience and training to improve the quality of the workforce.
We have to take another break, but when we come back, I want to kind of continue in that thread and talk more about the various roles, because we see the roles of a lot of these people who are involved in these processes changing, and we'll have that conversation when we come back with John Dittmer on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose.
Do you know what's in store for the federal workforce in the next 18 months? NGA.net does. According to OPM, over 42,000 federal employees retired in the first 2 months of 2013 alone. At that rate, over 250,000 federal employees could retire by the end of the year. With traditional government hiring processes, it can take months to fill these open positions. Can you afford to wait that long to replace your retiring employees? With flexible recruiting and talent management solutions from NGA.net, agencies can shorten the federal hiring cycle and leverage in-depth analytics for greater insight into potential workforce shortages and identify hiring bottlenecks. NGA.net's agile approach to HR technology provides cloud-based talent acquisition and talent management solutions specifically designed for federal agencies to achieve outstanding workforce performance. Visit NGA.net today to see how they can help you with your agency recruitment and talent management needs. NGA.net. Performance you can count on.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report, provided by Raytheon.
Secretary Kerry recently characterized the U.S.-Japan relationship as one of the strongest on Earth. Kerry continues to pledge support to the ally in face of threats of a preemptive nuclear strike from North Korea. Japan deployed Navy ships armed with Standard Missile 3s to the Sea of Japan to intercept incoming ballistic missiles. The U.S. and Japan are the only countries to employ this missile defense interceptor, and the allies are partners in the development of the next generation SM-3, the Block 2A, which is expected to deploy by 2018.
5 million hours of experience, 22 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 protects. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Seniors Home Exercise. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. Working out with a safe and sensible exercise DVD can do a senior good. At the University of Illinois, Edward McCauley tested a DVD program that focused on flexibility, toning, and balance. McCauley says most of the 307 seniors stayed with it over the 6 months of the study and did about as much work as the program required. And he says physical tests showed they wound up in better shape.
For older adults, coupling aerobic activity like brisk walking with activities that improve flexibility, strength, and balance are likely to reap the greatest physical and mental health benefits.
The study in Journals of Gerontology Series A, Biological Sciences, and Medical Sciences was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for April is Autism Speaks. Autism now affects 1 in 88 children, including 1 in 51 boys, making it the fastest-growing serious developmental disability in the United States. Autism Speaks is leading the way in awareness, advocacy, and research, and is dedicated to improving the lives of individuals and families affected by autism spectrum disorders. For more info, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My industry chatter guest today is John Dittmer of Array Applied Innovation. And we talked about in the last segment the changing roles of some of the executives in the C-suite. It's very fluid right now all across government, not just in the defense sector, but the CIOs are fulfilling different responsibilities than they have in the past. The chief acquisition officers are. The CFOs are. How do you see all of that affecting the way that agencies are acquiring IT today? And where do you think this evolution winds up taking those various jobs and then affecting where do you think it takes the work that needs to get done, which is fulfilling the mission of the agencies in through technology?
Well, the fluidity is not helping anything. We talked about the rate of change of the technology, but unless we're learning lessons from the people before us, we're not going to improve the way we're doing business. I'm not seeing that rate of change within the Department of Defense, but in fact, we've had quite a, maybe we need more change to change the way we do business. You know, change for change's sake is no fun and often not productive. But there is some change that, if structured appropriately, can drive a lot of the transformation that we need to drive. I worry that the rate of change within the executive suites is costing us significantly, both in terms of the opportunities that we're losing and the lack of the easy answer is the lack of leadership that is that we're growing as a result. It's hard to grow a CIO. It's very hard to grow. You know, what's the right combination of skills? It's, from my perspective, it's predominantly leadership with some technical experience, but not technical expertise. We certainly don't do much within the Department of Defense to grow that.
Well, to be fair, that's not peculiar to DOD. I mean, that's the typical, the conversation I've had with a number of human resources experts across government is how do you, within the federal HR system, how do you identify people with leadership potential and give them opportunities to accentuate that? That's not how the system's built. The system's built to promote people who are good at the technical aspect of their job and make them managers. And agencies find that then they wind up with a lot of managers, but not necessarily leaders. Correct. In leadership roles.
Correct.
So DOD is not the only place that that's happening.
Well, because of the way it's structured, we've got a military promotion process that promotes effective leaders. What I find is that often the challenge isn't leadership, but the challenge is understanding the IT enterprise and what problems need to be solved and what priority, what opportunities exist. the service CIOs are constantly visited by people like myself who have agendas, who have products they want to sell, capabilities they want to market. It's very difficult to listen to all of that banter and filter out what's really important. You know, what capability of the hundreds of capabilities that have been identified to me as the CIO do I really need to adopt? What's, because there are competing standards, competing products, competing services, competing vendors. There's a lot of information out there. What's really important?
Now, a lot of agencies have gone to a CTO model. That adds another person to the C-suite. Are you seeing that being successful at helping that leader understand that part of it while still being able to focus on the leadership elements of the job?
Absolutely. That's making a big difference. That's a great combination. I mean, chief management officer, chief information officer, chief technology officer, definitely warranted functions within the C-suite. What's really challenging, at least from my perspective, is empowering those individuals with the staff and resources to do the job that needs to be done. Back to the governance process. I'm sure you appreciate that the money doesn't flow through the IT executive suite. That makes it extremely challenging for them to accomplish an agenda when they don't have any teeth to mm-hmm. enforce it.
Now, the establishment of that kind of hierarchy, and we have the chief information security officer in there too, as cybersecurity has become more of a priority at various agencies. But you use that term that I hadn't really thought much of before, which is an IT C-suite that's kind of in and of itself, yet we're seeing those CIOs want to be integrated into the broader C-suite. They want to be sitting with the secretary and the CFO and the CAO, chief human capital officer, and so on, and being involved in all of that decision-making process. The CIOs that you're seeing being successful at that, what are they doing differently in your mind than the ones that are not having that success in demonstrating that they're ready for that kind of thing?
They're forcing a level of visibility and communications that ensure that the right decisions are being made. It's all about, at least in my mind, understanding what aspect of the IT challenge you want to focus on first. Right now, the focus is the economy and saving money. And there's two ways to approach that. We can just reel in the spending and do things the same way we've been doing business. That means you focus primarily on priorities, and everything of a lesser priority doesn't get done. The other way is to transform the way you're doing business to fit within the new level of spending. Unfortunately, we're not seeing a lot of that. That's primarily, at least in my opinion, because of the lack of empowerment. It's still a corporate structure driving the train. The CIO isn't truly empowered as they might be in a commercial entity to make those types of decisions.
Now, that's where I want to go next when we come back, because that you've kind of laid out a dichotomy there, and I keep hearing the word opportunity when it comes to the budget times that we're in right now. And I want to explore that a little bit more with you when we come back. John Dittmer is my guest. He is the Vice President for Array Applied Innovation, and we'll continue our conversation in a minute on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
President Barack Obama met with Saudi Foreign Minister Prince Saud al-Faisal yesterday. National Security spokesperson Caitlin Hayden says they were joined by National Security Advisor Tom Donilon. Hayden says during the meeting, the president and Prince al-Faisal reaffirmed the strong partnership between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia and discussed developments in the region, specifically Syria. Among their principal concerns is how to bring the conflict to a peaceful end. I'm J.J. Green.
We see the hiker. He appears injured.
Every day, the Army and National Guard take to the skies in their newest helicopter, the UH-72A Lakota from EADS North America. Whether for medical evacuation, search and rescue, or emergency response, the Lakota ensures our armed forces complete the mission.
Hiker is secure.
And every Lakota's been delivered on time and on budget.
ETA, 30 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Are you a federal employee or government contractor? FederalNewsRadio.com is the best source for news that helps you do your job better. Our news team brings you the latest on federal pay and benefits, technology, defense, retirement, acquisition, and the federal budget as it's happening. FederalNewsRadio.com gives a voice to the federal community. Read and hear interviews with federal leaders, members of Congress, and industry. Find it all at FederalNewsRadio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
Federal News Radio and the Public Employees Roundtable invite you to join us in celebrating Public Service Recognition Week, May 5th through 11th, a time set aside and designated by Congress to recognize and thank the dedicated men and women who serve at the federal, state, and local levels. To kick off PSRW 2013, the Public Employees Roundtable will host the inaugural Public Service 5K Run and Walk at Anacostia Park Sunday, May 5th. Show your support for public servants and join us at the race. Find race details and register at PSRW.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. John Dittmer of Array Applied Innovation, my guest for industry chatter today. And I mentioned talked about the two kinds of the crossroads that we're at, essentially, where we have an opportunity to either just cut costs and really just think about money in the very rawest sense, or to do transformations that will result in operational efficiencies or productivity gains or whatever, at the same time that you're hitting the numbers that you need to hit for budgetary reasons. Right. And as we talked about this during the break, John, you said, talking about risk, you can manage the risk. But I see a tremendous aversion to even introducing any risk into a system, let alone, or a procedure or whatever, let alone trying to manage it, aware of the fact that it will be there. The desire seems to be to completely eliminate risk from any operation. That's my observation. First of all, is that a fair observation? And if so, then how do you get rid of that total risk aversion?
It's totally a fair observation. If you think about the way the money flows and how our leaders are rewarded or evaluated, it's all about accomplishing the mission within the amount of money that they're allocated. And they're empowered to make decisions with regard to the services that they're funded to provide. It doesn't take much oversight to do that. Somebody can say, you used to give me 10 widgets. I have 50% of the budget. I now want 5 widgets. They can make that decision without any oversight. They've got a contract in place. It's real easy for them to do. If they've got a transformational mind, maybe there's a way they still get 10 widgets, but now they use a new widget engine. And this widget engine has to go through a testing process and a whole new set of standard evaluation. There's quite a bit more oversight associated with changing the way they do business. They may not be empowered to make that type of decision. So they've got to walk back through the acquisition process, and potentially, worst case scenario, they have to go back to Congress because it's a new program,
mm-hmm.
a new start. So back to the agile acquisition governance process, you know, if we had an agile way of saying, you know, that makes sense. You know, if you can still produce 10 widgets and meet the net effect of the customer's intent with this transformational way of doing business, you ought to be able to do that with very little oversight. But that's not the way the acquisition process is effectively working in most cases. And nobody wants to take the time to go back and rewicker their acquisition strategy to accomplish that.
Is that a Congress problem?
No, I think it's just an execution problem, to be honest. I think the acquisition decision makers are more empowered than they're empowered at a higher level than they're executing to. They're fairly risk averse, and they want to make the safe decisions.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that maybe they know that they have the ability to do that and aren't, or is it maybe just an awareness problem at the very basic level?
I think it's more the latter. I don't know. Everybody wants to do the right thing, and I think everybody believes they're making the best decisions they can. I don't think they, again, back to some of the previous conversations we had, there aren't a lot of good examples of transformation within the acquisition process to enable that type of behavior. If we had a couple of good examples, there might be more decision makers that are willing to stick their necks out to affect that kind of change.
Now, another area of aversion historically for agencies is willingness to talk about those success stories. I mean, as a journalist, it drives me crazy sometimes because I hear good stories and would love to tell them, well, no, we're not, that's, you know. And so I wonder if there's a role for industry to play in that, to be able to tell those stories and there's a fine line there, too, where you come off looking like you're just doing advertising, but at some point in time, these stories should be told for the benefit of the agency and then the benefit of the taxpayer, it seems.
Absolutely. And there are organizations that foster that type of interaction. There are lots of professional development organizations that we're aligned with that where those types of stories are told, but they're not told that often in the press. That's a great point. And I personally don't know of a lot of those types of transformational stories in the current environment,
mm-hmm.
but they've got to be there. They've got to be there, and I'd love to hear about them, and I certainly would do my part to market them.
Well, and certainly as the forcing function that you talked about earlier, they're bound to happen just by the nature of the way the business is transforming. When you look at that business transformation as it affects your company, how do you see maybe just your company or maybe the entire landscape of the defense service community, how do you see that looking in 2 years or 5 years, or is it even really possible to tell given how fluid the whole budget situation is?
I think 13 and 14, FY 13 and 14 are going to be just like they are, just like the current environment. They're going to be focused on a diminished budget without a lot of transformation. That's pushing off the inevitable. It's driving up the cost of operations. So that means the level of performance and sustainment will go down because the cost of doing business is going up. And there are going to be some crises, some transformational crises in a couple of years. And I want to be prepared for it. You know, I want to be the one with the contract vehicle in place and the experience, that transformational, innovational experience to be able to solve those types of crises and to help my customers and hopefully prevent those types of crises mm-hmm. from happening. But, you know, we tried some of these 800-pound gorillas to solve world hunger within the Air Force, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those are working. Well, maybe the 300-pound gorillas are working. The 800-pound gorilla didn't work. We don't have those in place. We don't have those big solutions in play right now. And with the fiscal environment, nobody's really got a substitute in place. They're just trying to stay alive at this point. They're going to be 2 years from now, there's going to be a whole new set of technology in play and a whole new set of challenges. I feel for the most part that we're going to be starting over again in 2 years. 2 years is a lot of time. I want to make sure that we're well postured with the right relationships to be able to navigate that for our customers.
We could take one more break, but I want to give you a lot of power when we come back
okay.
and hear what you do with it. John Dittmer's my guest. He's Vice President for Array Applied Innovation, and we'll continue our conversation, wrap it up in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
An inspiring story provided by Insperity.
I'm Stacy Redman, President and CEO of Strategy and Management Services, or SAMS. SAMS is an SBA 8A business that provides a broad range of strategy, management, and IT-related services to federal government agencies and commercial clients. Since 2011, we've gone from 4 employees to 80 employees. This growth would not have been possible without Insperity. Insperity gives us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Top companies and job seekers have tapped into the power of Washington's newest job site, PowerJobs.com. Isn't it time you join them? PowerJobs.com is the new career site made for Washington's top talent, featuring opportunities in the most influential industries that make up our region, including nonprofit, defense, government, finance, energy, healthcare, and technology. Opportunities from employers like K&L Gates, Virginia Hospital Center, and American Hospital Association. New on Power Jobs this week.
Senior Communications Officer Novo Zimes, News Media Outreach Manager Liuna, Cyber Policy Analyst Saitor, Social Media Manager Credit Union National Association, Intelligence Analyst CACI, and Associate Director Minority Business Development Agency. Find these jobs and more at Power Jobs.
Finally, a career site made for you. PowerJobs.com.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here. This message is brought to you by GEICO and WTOP.
Something that has not been sequestered are the Greater Washington Government Contractor Awards. Now in their 11th year, the awards honor the leadership, innovation, and commitment to excellence of the region's government contracting sector. In today's tough environment, boost your visibility by nominating your company or executive leader for one of these distinguished recognitions presented before an audience of 1,000 business and government leaders. Learn more and apply today at govconawards.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Industry chatter today with John Dittmer of Array Applied Innovation. And we talked about something that actually you suggested during one of the commercial breaks earlier in the show. You referred to what you might do if you were king for a day, IT king for a day. So I'm going to give you that power and let you make some decisions and maybe throw something over the side of the boat and maybe keep some things on board. What decisions would you make pretty quickly if you had the opportunity to do it, John?
Well, it's a large hump that we have to overcome to really affect the type of change that we need to. In my mind, being IT king for a day means putting the right court in place, to continue that analogy, so that we've got the agile governance process in place. And agile is the key word. We can't draw this thing out. We've got to force some change. There are opportunities, for example, right now to consolidate data centers, force a level of standardization in terms of the hardware suites and the product stacks. There's no reason not to do that. We don't need to each go out and compete our own hardware server vehicles. Let's just standardize and compete the business. Let industry and the defense agencies that provide that type of capability compete for the business open and fairly. But let's move out. In fact, this is the perfect environment to do something like that. We've got a couple of tough budget years. Let's take 13 and 14 and let's throttle back on sustainment. What's a couple more years when they've they've been at this level for 5 or 6 or 7 or 8. We'll put the truly mission critical changes in place, but for everybody else, let's stop what we're doing and force some migrations. Standardize. There's so much to be gained by just moving everybody to the same place. Do we need hundreds of data centers? We've got IT operations being conducted probably, and this is John Dittmer's guess, at several hundred locations throughout the Department of Defense. Let's do it in 6, and let's stand up those 6 data centers with not necessarily the bleeding edge, but the right technology to be able to manage an enterprise of several million people effectively. It's not rocket science. It's not the toughest job. In fact, everything that I would recommend is work that we've been doing and technology we've been using for probably 5 to 10 years.
Is it time to maybe go beyond that standardization and just take all of at least this part of it joint and cut it all the way across the Defense Department?
It depends on how we do business. If we do business jointly, it makes sense to pull the systems together. If the services are still operating independently, then it doesn't make sense to do that. But you can affect a significant efficiency without consolidating the applications or the operations, just by putting them on the same platform.
And just take it like a shared services approach across DOD.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. The applications don't have to change to do that.
And that's the part of it that I think has drawn the apprehension from the various branches, is we would have to completely change how we're doing things. And it sounds like you don't think that's the case.
In some cases, there is going to be change.
Mm-hmm.
There are some unique capabilities, some unique systems out there that are going to be forced to change. But for most of them, I don't think that's true.
There's a lot more we could cover, John, and we're out of time, but I'm grateful for you being here today. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.
John Dittmer is Vice President for Array Applied Innovation, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. We'll archive this conversation later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You can listen to it anytime you want. Hour number 2 of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming in just a minute.